This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. On February 24th of 2016, I drove out to Napa Valley Community College because Annie Finch was going to be there teaching a class that day and giving a reading in the evening. She was here from her residence in Maine. I have had her on my show before, but just reading her poems, and I wanted the opportunity to interview her, so out I went. And it turned out there was a bit of a bonus that day, too, because I ran into Tamam Khan, who is the author of a book called Untold, A History of the Wives of Prophet Muhammad. Alicia Ostriker wrote about her book, Swimming Amid the Names of God, Tamam Khan has written a brilliant and illuminating book, equally awesome to the depth of its research, the grace of its prose, and the beauty of its poetic voices. Untold should be read with joy by any reader who hopes to transcend current stereotypes about Islam. And some other people said some very nice things about this book as well, including Coleman Barks. So I'll be playing the interview that I held with Tamam Khan as well as Annie Finch. And if time allows, at the end of the program, I'll be playing some poems read by poets Louise Bogan, Muriel Rukeyser, Gertrude Stein, and perhaps a couple of others. Right now, let's move on, though, to my interview with Annie Finch. I am very pleased that my guest today is Annie Finch. She is a poet, performer, nonfiction writer, verse playwright, and entrepreneur who has published more than 20 books, most recently Spells, New and Selected Poems, and that came out from Wesleyan University Press. Her incantational and really gorgeously crafted poems use form to explore earth-centered spirituality, uniquely merging word, music, and ritual. Her poetry appears in such publications as Poetry, Paris Review, Norton Anthology of World Poetry, and Penguin Anthology of 20th Century American Poetry, and has been performed at Carnegie Hall, Metropolitan Museum of Art, and the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. You get around, Annie. You have a quote by the late Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Carolyn Kaiser on your website, and it goes like this. Whenever I get discouraged about some trends in American poetry, I think of Annie Finch, a shining light, and I feel better. And indeed, it was Carolyn Kaiser who brought us together when I arranged for us to go visit her at her care home shortly before she died in 2014. I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah, it's a very vivid memory for me.
Yeah, it was a special time. You had a very special connection with Carolyn Kaiser. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I feel very fortunate to have met her. I was in San Francisco, a young poet in San Francisco, and I just met her at a reading and talked to her briefly, told her how much I admired her, and then later on, I sent her my manuscript, and she responded with such a fabulous letter that really blew me away. It was so enthusiastic and so supportive, and that was really one of the moments where I thought, okay, this is going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it hadn't been an easy road to hoe at the beginning, and yeah. she really believed in me and made a wonderful comment for my book and reviewed the book. And after that, we stayed in touch. She would send me Christmas cards. And mm-hmm. I edited a book of essays about her later on because I felt she was so undersung, really.
Yeah. And despite the fact that she eventually won a Pulitzer Prize.
She did.
But
yeah,
she was such an incredible poet. I mean, true poet.
A true poet, yeah.
And why isn't she world famous?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's great that you had support from someone of her caliber, especially.
Yeah, and women supporting other women like that was, is not the common thing. As I wrote mm-hmm. about in the essay that I wrote about our visit with her for the Poetry Foundation website, visiting Carolyn Kaiser, I talked about that, how rare it was to have a woman poet who would mentor and help other women poets come along, as she did for me, and also for you, and also for Joyce Jenkins, and I think for so many, she had that capacity.
We need that.
Yeah, we really do.
Well, I was going to ask if you would please read A Carol for Carolyn, which appears in Annie's book called Calendars.
A Carol for Carolyn. It's easy to be a poet, brim with transparent water. That's a quote from Carolyn Kaiser's poem in the first stanza. A Carol for Carolyn. I dreamed of a poet who gave me a whale that shadowed clear pools through the kelp-making shade. When beached seafoam dried on the rocks, it would sail down currents that gathered to pool and cascade with turbulent order. She brims with transparent water, as mother and poet and daughter. The surface is broken and arching and full, impelled by the passions of nation and woman. The waves build and fall, the deep currents pull toward rocky pools, cupping the salt of the human. The ocean she's authored brims with transparent water for poet and mother and daughter.
That's beautiful. And it brings me right back to when we were sitting around that dining room table with her and Joyce Jenkins, and we each took turns reading poems to her, and she couldn't respond or didn't respond until right before we walked out the door. But it was just, it was magical.
It was magical. We were reading her poems, our favorites of her poems, and she's would just light up, or she would nod knowingly, or kind of smile proudly, and it really felt that she was
connecting. She was connecting, and everyone kept saying, "Well, she won't respond. She won't respond because of her illness." But right as we were heading out the door, she looked up and said, "Thank you," and we just beaming. You know, it was wonderful.
Yeah, just beaming. Yeah, well, we really wanted to show her how much she meant to us.
Yeah,
I think we did.
I think we did. Well, you first came to my attention when I was in my MFA program in Vermont, and you were presented as a new formalist poet along with people like Dana Gioia, our new California State Poet Laureate, and I wonder what the importance is to you of writing in form, how that adds muscle to your work, maybe, and why is that your preferred method in writing poetry? Mm.
Well, yeah, I'll say that the label New Formalist is one that I'm now fine with, but it did have such a limited connotation, especially at the beginning, and I think people thought of it as poets who wanted to return to the great traditions of English literature, especially through iambic pentameter and writing in a very cerebral and clear style. And my relationship with being a formalist is pretty much opposite to that.
Yep.
To me, it's very much of the body, very subversive, revolutionary. It's about empowering the body and the movements and rhythms of being a woman, or being a human in a culture which to me is essentially matriarchal and spiritual. Mm-hmm. And form for me is a way of connecting into the powers of spirituality and being a powerful woman. So the way I understand form is also quite different than the way people would normally think of a new formalist, because for me it's all about what I call metrical diversity, and very much about variety and multi-formalism, which is the name of a book I've edited about formalism. So I've been working with these rhythms since getting my PhD at Stanford in 1990. And that was, to get that PhD, I did a book called, been published as The Ghost of Meter. And the idea was to look at the way rhythmic patterns have manifested themselves in the work of poets. And it's almost like a secret code where the different rhythms mm-hmm. embody different energies. And so what I discovered was that the non-iambic meters in poets from Whitman to Dickinson, the dactylic rolling triple rhythms, had mm-hmm. a completely different message than the iambic pentameter. Right. And so after that, it was through a mental thing that I found it out, and I spent years training myself to start writing in these alternative meters. So now I've been working with this now for another 25 years or whatever, and I've developed a whole language, a vocabulary of the different meters and rhythms and how they resonate with different parts of my personality. Now I'm starting to teach this to students as a kind of mm-hmm. spiritual path. So there's the one meter that resonates more with the mind, one with the body, one with the heart, one with the will, one with the spirit. And it's, you can go through these different meters and really develop your spiritual awareness mm-hmm. through the use of these rhythms, which to me, it ties in with very ancient uses of poetic form by the Celtic bards, mm-hmm. by mystics. I mean, the power of poetry, the magic power of poetry, to me is accessible primarily through rhythm. And then on a larger level, with forms of stanzas and shapes of poetry and things
right,
like that.
Right. Well, you just you were out here teaching a workshop,
yeah,
right, and I'm assuming it had to do with just what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, now. This workshop was a poetry workshop, so we worked mm-hmm. on, you know, more on individual poems and how they would work. But I also am developing workshops that are more from a spiritual approach for
goddess
people
spirituality.
Who might not even be poets yet, but mm-hmm. can use these techniques and tools to access different parts of themselves. So I get mm-hmm. it from both angles, from both directions.
What a life. It's wonderful. What a way to spend your
time. It's a lot of fun.
Would you, for our listeners, tell us how you would define goddess spirituality and why perhaps more than ever that kind of spirituality is important in our world right now?
Yes, exactly. I would define goddess spirituality as honoring, celebrating, nurturing, and expressing the sacred and divine feminine female qualities within every person.
Every person,
every
right.
person. And at this point in our world, things have gone so out of whack in the other direction that it's really an urgent job immediately. Yesterday,
yeah.
To bring the power of the feminine and the complete honoring of that back. So, yeah, I'm so passionate about this. And I feel that poets have a special role to play, because I do feel that through rhythm, we can teach ways to be in harmony with each other, ways to be in harmony with the earth, and ways to be in harmony with the different rhythms. So in my system, iambic is the meter of the will, but there's also the meters of the heart, the mind, the spirit, and the body. Mm-hmm. And these are more the rhythms of the goddess. So for poets to begin to learn the full spectrum of metrical patterns available to us mm-hmm. and embody those, use them, speak out, we can be leaders in this knitting together of knitting humanity back into connection with the earth and the goddess power.
That's a big job.
And a fun one.
So when you're holding a goddess spirituality type of workshop or training, what kind of ritual might you perform? Would you describe a ritual for us?
Sure. You mean with the poet one? Because I also do yeah. rituals that are not involving poetry, but specifically with using poetry for spiritual purposes. One of the rituals I like to do is to help people get in touch with their own inner rhythms. So I think everyone has sort of a unique fingerprint rhythmically, certain meters that mean more to them, certain meters that manifest different aspects of themselves, meters that they're more comfortable with, other meters that they need to bring up to kind of achieve a balance. And one way I like to work is through people's names. So we might, whether it's your given name or a spirit name, a name that really means something to you, you can work with the rhythm of that name as a sort of meditative talisman, and then come up with some other lines in the same rhythm. There's a kind of a trance state you can get into, and then you can end up with a talisman that is like a magical amulet for you.
Very interesting.
About your identity. So that's one of the things that we would do.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, I think, given the time, that this would be a good time to kind of turn you over to read some of your work. And, you know, you can comment on any of the poems that you'd like to, but I'm just going to turn it over to you now.
Okay, that will be fun. And thanks for the interview. This is a delightful show and program, and I'm really happy to be on it. And looking forward to cooking up a visit.
Yes, to Sonoma County.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting some of your listeners there.
Good.
So I'll start with a couple of goddess poems. Here's one to Brigid, the Celtic goddess of poetry. And she was the goddess of poetry and also of smithwork and of healing. So in the poem, there's a cauldron, which is where she mixes up her magical medicines. There's a reference to the sun because she's a fiery goddess. And the rhythm is an ancient Celtic rhythm that would have been used by the Celtic bards. Ring, 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 hammers fall. The gold will all be beaten over sudden flaming fire, moving from you the pyre. Sweeten your cauldron until the sun runs with one flame through the day. And the healing water will sing, linger on tongues, burn away.
Nice. Okay, I'm supposed to be just sitting here listening, but it's hard not to respond.
I'm so glad. No, it's much more fun when you respond. Because to me, being a poet is really about being in community and being useful and engaged with the community. So you are in the community right now. I appreciate that. Ghazal for a Poetess. And this begins with a quote from Laurence Hope, who was a wonderful woman in the very early 20th century who traveled to India and wrote poetry there and did it all under a man's name. Her name was Laurence Hope. Many the nights that have passed, but I remember the river of pearls at Fez and Sayomar, whom I loved. Laurence Hope, 1903. Ghazal for a Poetess. The corners of the frontispiece yellow from their darker edges. Aching eyes lift in tremolo from their darker edges. Moon lits your blood in the jasmine blooming gardens. Bodies still glide in tableau from their darker edges. Your hungry soul laps at the page with its burning, burning. Your moans send out an echo from their darker edges. Silk covers your arms, your fingers, your lips, your voice. Your black lines weave a trousseau from their darker edges. Wind strikes at the palm trees where you walked. Fronds shake like tousled arrows from their darker edges. Your nights spread quiet over parched and dreary sand. Finches fill them till they glow from their darker edges.
Beautiful.
And letter for Emily Dickinson. And in here you'll notice what's written on Dickinson's grave, the words called back. Letter for Emily Dickinson. When I cut words you never may have said into fresh patterns, pierced in place with pins, ready to hold them down with my own thread, they change and twist sometimes. Their color spins loose, and your spider generosity lends them from language that will never be free of you, after all. My sampler reads, called back. It says, she scribbled out these screeds. It calls, she left this trace, and now we start. In stitched directions that follow the leads I take from you as you take me apart. You wrote some of your lines while baking bread, propping a sheet of paper by the bins of salt and flour. So if your kneading led to words, you'd tether them as if in thin black loops on paper. When they sang to be free, you captured those quick birds relentlessly and kept a slow, sure mercy in your deeds, leaving them room to peck and hunt their seeds in the white cages your vast iron art had made by moving books and lives and creeds. I take from you as you take me apart.
It's wonderful. I just have to make a comment because there have been so many poems written to Emily Dickinson, for Emily Dickinson, about Emily Dickinson. And this is such a beautifully respectful poem. And I have run across poems written by some pretty famous men who, to me, they were just extremely disrespectful to Emily Dickinson, a taking over of Emily Dickinson.
Exactly, yeah. I know what you mean.
So thank you. Thank you for that poem.
You're very welcome. Yeah, I think we have a lot to learn about women's poetic traditions and how to honor the women poets who came before us. And this has always been a very important calling to me. Maybe perhaps because my mother is a poet and a very fine poet and not really published. I helped her publish her first book, and then she self-published several books after that. She's 94 years old now.
Oh my gosh.
But
what's her name?
Maggie Finch.
Maggie Finch.
Yeah.
A poet's name for sure.
Yeah. So I take it very seriously, and that's one of the reasons I started the WOMPO list back in 97, and it's still going strong. So anyone out there who wants to connect with a great community about thousands of women poets and people discussing women's poetry, you could go to WOMPO, WOMPO, and
is that
join
.org?
The listserv. It's actually housed now at Nassau Community College in Long Island, so it might be WOMPO at ncc.org or something like that.
Okay, we'll find it.
But it's out there, yeah. And I'm thinking about even maybe starting a women's poetry conference at some point.
Wonderful.
Because, you know, there are conferences for a lot of different communities of poetry, of poets, but there really isn't one for women poets. And
I think that's a great idea.
Isn't that a wonderful idea? Yeah, I think it's
and I think you should hold it here in California.
That would make a lot of sense. Well, I'm certainly willing to work on it or advise on it because
well,
I think
ahead.
It's important.
Go ahead and read some more.
So, yeah, but I have another Dickinson poem, actually, that I can read you, an earlier one. It's very short. And this one I had an editor try to take it out of my first book, Eve, because he said it was too much like Dickinson. But I left it in because...
Good.
And I've lately been writing a lot of poems in Dickinson's style, and I can read one of those as well. Tribute, as an epigraph from Emily Dickinson. You'll find it when you try to die. Tribute. When there are no words left to live, I have elected hers to haunt me till the margins give and I am left alone. One voice has vanished through my own to make me like a stone, one that the falling leaves will sink not over but upon.
Someone didn't want that in your book. Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah. Thank you for insisting.
Thank you. Yeah, I think, again, it goes back to a kind of sexism that for a woman to have a unique poetic form, it has to just stay unique. Whereas I'm starting to write in her form, because, you know, when Milton used blank verse for Paradise Lost, it became the beginning of a tradition. And that's
right.
Because other poets respected and honored and continued the form. So that's what I was trying to do. But for this man, it was a little hard to get his
difficult.
Head around that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. Here's one that's about writing poetry as well, I think, on some level, but it's also about baking bread. And this is the last poem in Calendars. It's called Wild Yeasts. Rumbling away up my dough's heavy throat to its head, seeping the trailed airborne daughters down into the core, bubbles go rioting through my long-kneaded new bread. Softly now, breath of the wildest yeast starts to roar. My hands work the peaked foam, push insides out into the light, edge shining new sinews back under the generous arch that time's final sigh will conclude. Dry time will stretch tight whistling stops of quick heat through my long darkened starch. How could I send quiet through this resonant, strange, vaulting loaf, murmuring, sounding with spores, and the long, simple air, and the bright, free road moving. I sing as I terrace a loaf out of my hands it has filled like a long-answered prayer. Now the worshipping savage cathedral our mouths make will lace death and its food in the moment that refracts this place.
Fantastic. Oh, what is the name of that poem again?
It's called Wild Yeasts.
Wild Yeasts, and it's in her book Calendars. I know you have to have it.
And also in Spells.
It's in Spells also. Yeah. Oh, good.
So, yeah, I can read some of the poems in Spells that are previously unpublished. It's kind of, actually, this is a California story, because in the 80s when I was... I moved to California in the late 80s to go to Stanford, and around that time I was writing a lot of poems. I was really getting into form and meter, and I was writing these experimental form poems mm-hmm. in form and meter, and fairly postmodern. And at the time, nowadays a lot of experimental poets are getting back into meter, but mm-hmm. it wasn't done then, and they were not published for until a few years ago. So they just sat there for 25 years. I call them the lost poems. So here's a few of the lost poems. This is one I think is probably about poetry. It's called Such Husks. Such husks of hollowed influence, such clear, thick patterns from the nights that held me full. You keep your own still paces with the last touch of a spirit on you, like a down that ripens, falling everywhere we pass.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. And you're listening to Annie Finch, who is reading from her books Spells and Calendars. This was recorded at Napa Valley Community College in February of 2016. Let's return now to Annie Finch.
And here's one called Dusk. When dusk and I are not the claims of dusk, the hands of dusk, the chains, the open cuts, the depth of dusk, I will not call them cuts. Something flies by in speckles in the dusk. I'll call it land in waters that are light. I'll follow it to drown instead in flesh, as if I had an enemy in flesh, since I will have no enemy in light. Soon with the darkness, all the arrows, charge their hands, will hold me. And then open flowers touch with their night-edged blossoms other flowers. And dusk, now after me, with arrows charge its loads of islands down from that high cave-like walls from dripping night.
and I am laved.
Now, also in the back of Spells, you have a section of translations.
Yeah.
And who have you translated? And maybe you can read a couple of those.
Sure, that would be wonderful. I've translated mostly poets whose meter really interests me.
Uh-huh.
So Akhmatova, for example, did three poems in amphibrachic, three sonnets in amphibrachic meter, and that's one of the meters I love. It's the meter of the limerick. And I translated all three of those with the help of the wonderful Russian scholar George Klein, who's Brodsky's translator. So I can read one of
those. So in Russian, she wrote in this meter.
Yeah.
And when you translated it, you hung on to the meter. How difficult. Oh, my gosh. Okay, please, go for it.
I love a good metrical challenge, which is actually amphibrax what I just said. I love a good metrical challenge. So that's what I love. And it just, I feel inhabited by the spirit of the poet, and it just comes out. So this is, well, they're all wonderful and completely different. There's one about Cleopatra, and there's one about kind of a sad one about being a poet. Shall I do Cleopatra?
Do Cleopatra.
I'll do Cleopatra. That'd be great. She has two epigraphs. From Shakespeare, I am air and fire. And from Pushkin, Alexandria's palaces were covered with sweet shade. Cleopatra by Anna Akhmatova. Already she's kissed him, her Antony, on his warm, dead lips. Already she's kneeled down in front of Augustus and cried. And now she's betrayed by the servants. Victorious trumpets sound under the eagle of Rome, and the darkness spreads wide. The last of her beauty's tall conquests comes in, his voice grave, his stammering whisper enfolds her. As he bends to say, they'll lead you before him in the triumph, you like a slave. Her throat, like the neck of a swan, holds its tranquil sway. Tomorrow, the children in chains, and so little remaining for her in the world, just to banter again with this man, then take the black snake in a gesture like pity, and bring it close to her rich breast at last with her indifferent hand.
Yeah, and that meter, you're right. I mean, it is like a limerick, and hopefully I'll get this show on the air in March, you know, right after St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, right. It's a fabulous meter. I have a little essay on it, and I have a book of essays called The Body of Poetry, and there's an essay in there called My Affair with the Amphibrach. I just fell madly in love with it.
And that book is still available?
Oh, very much so. Great. Yeah, University of Michigan Press, The Body of Poetry, Essays on Women, Form, and the Poetic Self. But yeah, a meter like this, you know, that it has its... What I love about doing the translation in meter is that meter is really the one part of translation that you don't have to worry about. It is exactly the same in both languages.
Right.
So
right.
That's one reason I love to...
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
It just gives me chills, the meter of that poem. And that's her meter. That's
her meter. This is as close to her as we can get we don't speak and understand Russian.
Exactly. It is as close as we can get. Exactly. So the biggest translation project I did was, I've done a little bit of Greek. I'm actually working on a Sappho very slowly because I do know some Greek. And I'm working on filling in the fragments that are missing of Sappho to make complete sapphic stanzas.
I can't wait.
Her meter is so gorgeous.
Keep you posted on that project.
I will. And this is just a little, this is the only one that's really complete now. It's called A Fragment of Sappho, and it is in her exact meter, the sapphic stanza. It is not appropriate in a household given to the muses. Those lamentations do not belong here. It is not appropriate in a household given to the muses. Those lamentations do not belong here.
That's fabulous.
With wise words from our ancestors. So I'll read one more translation. This is by Louise Labbé, who's a wonderful 16th century French poet. And you may have heard there's some controversy now. Some people think she was actually a man, or her poems were made up by men. I don't believe it for a minute. But
The man published himself as a woman so that, you know, he would get more attention.
Exactly.
It's a little inside out.
Yeah. But whoever they are, they're wonderful poems. And I did her entire collection of poems. It's published by University of Chicago Press. And this is probably her most famous sonnet. It's called Kiss Me Again. Kiss me again, re-kiss me, and then kiss me again with your richest, most succulent kiss. Then adore me with another kiss, meant to steam out fourfold the very hottest hiss from my love-hot coals. Do I hear you moaning? This is my plan to soothe you. 10 more kisses, sent just for your pleasure. Then, both sweetly bent on love, we'll enter joy through doubleness, and we'll each have 2 loving lives to tend, one in our single self, one in our friend. I'll tell you something honest now, my love. It's very bad for me to live apart. There's no way I can have a happy heart without some place outside myself to move.
That's fantastic. Tell us the name of the book.
Louise Labbé, and University of Chicago published The Complete Poetry and Prose of Louise Labbé. Mm-hmm. I actually own the rights to just the poems, and I would love to publish a little book just of her poems because they're much shorter than her prose.
Uh-huh.
So I may even publish it myself. I'm starting to get into self-publishing now.
You know what? The important thing is that the work gets out in the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, we have time for probably one more poem, so why don't you read one of yours again in closing?
All right. Well, I guess there are a lot of poets and poetry lovers listening to this show, obviously, so why don't
I close there
with
are.
The Blessing on the Poets.
Great.
For all of you poets out there. And I'm going to just recite this one so I can channel
okay,
the
people,
magic
the
for
book
you.
Is closed and she's reciting.
A blessing on the poets. Patient earth diggers, impatient fire makers, hungry word takers, and roving sound lovers, time keepers and haters, wake sleepers, sleep wakers, sharers and savers, musers and acres. May language's language, the silence that moves under each word, move you over and over, turning you wondering back to surprise.
Fabulous. Thank you. So, Annie, what's next for you as far as a project, a book? What's next?
I have, let's see, there's a book of poems, a couple of books of poems, but I think I'm combining them into one at this point called Invocations to the Five Directions, and that's going to be a book where I actually use these 5 different meters in separate sections of the book.
Oh, wonderful.
So I'm putting that together. I'm also starting on a literary memoir. Well, it's a spiritual literary memoir called How I Became a Witch, and I have an agent who's been working with me on this for years and starting to get that together. And I'm also doing a spiritual book called 5 Directions to Your Inner Goddess, which is tangentially got a little poetry in it, but it's for a broader spiritual audience.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these 3 books I'm working on finishing, and the Sappho project I want to pick up again soon. And I'm developing a community called the Poetry Witches Community online. And I'm developing online ways to teach the secrets of meter more effectively, because I can go around and do these small workshops like I did yesterday to 12 people at a time. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in developing like some online tools, videos, courseworks, mm-hmm. and things like that, so people can take like a meter class with me online.
Great.
And I've started this Poetry Witches magazine, which publishes, it has, we have poetry contests every month for formal poetry contests, and you can win free membership in the Poetry Witches community, which is a place you can work on meter and form, and also there's also discussions of like goddessy stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really bring together a community with poets and a spiritual community
together.
It's
fantastic. It's a lot of work, and it sounds really exciting.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm having fun building a new life.
Well, good. Well, thank you so much for coming here today to record this show, and I do hope we get you in Sonoma County in 2017, I guess we're looking at.
Right? Thank you. I'm going to look forward to that and to meeting a lot of your listeners back.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure, Catherine.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. My next guest is Tamam Khan, and I'm going to spell that for you. T-A-M-A-M is her first name, Khan, K-A-H-N. She is the author of a book called Untold, A History of the Wives of Prophet Muhammad. And this is a very beautiful book. It was published by Monkfish. In what year was it published?
2010.
So I wonder, first of all, welcome.
Thank you, Tamam.
And would you tell us a little bit about this book, Untold, where you got the idea to write this book, what's inside it, and maybe read one or two poems that are that appear?
I'd be happy to. I went to Morocco probably around the year 2000, and I found the women there to be so powerful and so loving, and it was everything that I had been led to believe Islam was not. And so I began to research the women at the beginning of Islam, because I wanted to know if they were like that, if they had that kind of strong, empowered, happy, joyful attitude. And it was like a gold mine. I began to uncover these stories of these matriarchal women, that one woman had saved a peace treaty by giving the prophet the right advice. His first wife was a businesswoman who employed Prophet Muhammad, and then when she found out that he was had this really deep spirituality, she asked him to marry her, and they had four children.
Oh my. Huh.
And then when she died and Prophet had to move north to Medina from Mecca, he married a series of women, mainly as to help them, women who were widows, women who would forge alliances by their marriage. So that was a whole different phase of his life. And then I wrote about those women. And the deeper I went, I found out things, for instance, that the prophet was married to two Jewish women. So Judaism was pulled in. And he had a child with an amazing Coptic Christian woman from Egypt. So these were all things I didn't know, and I started putting them together in poems, writing poems about them. And then at a certain point, the poet Fred Chappell had become kind of a mentor to me, and I took these poems to him, and I said, what should I do? And he said, now you need to write the prose. You need to write a whole prose story of who they are and embed the poems in the prose.
Uh-huh.
And that process is called a prosametrum. It's one of
those.
That's
a beautiful word. I have not heard of that.
I know. Nobody has. It's a dead word, but Boethius used it in former times. And it works really well, because you're reading along and finding out what's happening. And then you go deeper in with a poem. And so that's what Untold became.
Well, it's not a dead word anymore, because here you are with Untold, which is exactly that, right?
Well, the interesting thing is that it's on the internet, mm-hmm. All over the internet, but if you look it up in the dictionary, it's not there.
Oh. Yeah. And yet we have some very strange words in the dictionary.
We do. Well, maybe it's changed since I last looked. Things happen really fast.
Well, would you read a couple of poems that are in Untold?
I certainly will. I'll start with one that's pretty easy to understand and to read. And this came from distilling the experience of the Prophet and his daughter Fatima, and showing her kind of matriarchal strength. It's called In Flight. Fatima, daughter of Khadija, is a pilot. She is trustworthy as salt. Her knowledge demystifies navigational instruments. She holds a perfect safety record. The Prophet has a seat in economy class. The airline lets him ride free. He stretches and yawns, works the crossword with a number two pencil. He is looking for a short word for handlers of history. He's thinking about the usefulness of an eraser, the technology of flight. Like revelation, a matter of fuel, acceleration, lift. He contemplates the pilot's job to crease a brief diagonal in the sky's fabric, then fly the 747 at 38,000 feet. Fatima does this. He is pleased, he tells himself, to be in her hands. He taps the eraser on the tray table and pauses. A four-letter word that begins with a letter B. Considers scholars and mangled meanings. That is, what they made of his work, his life, the message. Bent or bash won't fit. Ah, bias.
That's great.
So it really kind of explains what's happening in Islam right now. He would be extremely upset with the direction things have gone.
As we should all be extremely upset with the way things have gone, absolutely.
Yes. So I thought that would be good because it just is a metaphor, a complete metaphor mm-hmm. for what's happening. What the other one I will read is... Now, the whole Middle Eastern culture has this absolutely wonderful characteristic, which is called adab. And adab has to do with, it's a refined behavior, a politeness, consideration for others, doing the right thing at the right time for the right reason. And it goes into hospitality. And it's just... The Middle East is saturated with this quality. So this is called Wild Honey of Adab. Was there ever a better gesture for us than this? The way Muhammad rises when Fatima enters the room and takes her hand to kiss it, then indicates his seat to her. At her house, she reciprocates. Each garland of respect reveals the wild honey of Adab. Inflorescent meadows spreading out, scented with grace. Since we know the sting of a shrug, how kindness can pivot and leave the room without a glance. Become the beekeeper, stretch toward the buzz of others. Watch over each hive as the honeybees waggle. Move. Slow, bee veil lowered, honor the queen, and hand a sweet jar to everyone you meet.
Oh, how lovely. Just lovely. I'm looking at the back of your book, Untold, and you have some wonderful people here who are telling us that this is indeed a great book. Coleman Barks, Alicia Osterger, who read for the Word Temple Poetry Series a couple of years ago. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
So how long have you been involved in this kind of research?
Well, I think it was just going to Morocco in around 2000, so that would make it 16 years. Mm-hmm. And in 2010, this scholar invited me to do a book on Fatima. Actually, I've been reading Fatima poems here. Fatima's the youngest daughter of the Prophet, mm-hmm. and she is the bridge of his lineage because she's the only one who post-deceased him. The rest all died before he died. And she had children, and her children became leaders. Mm-hmm. Now, the sad thing is, the place that we're at in the world right now has this thing called the Shia-Sunni split.
Right.
People have heard of that. And that happens around Fatima's family.
Oh, dear.
She and her husband. Oh. It would be as if she and her husband were Barack Obama's daughter and son-in-law. And then there were all the politicians. And so after his death, the people who were like Secretary of State, head of the military, head of Congress, they all took turns becoming leaders of Islam.
Oh, my.
That was the Sunni.
Uh-huh.
They knew how to govern.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter, Fatima, and her husband were the Shia, and they had a kind of more spiritual, kind of deep connection with the essence of what Islam was from that point of view. They're also seen sometimes as just being not as pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was quite a while until Ali became head of Islam. And when that happened, by then, Islam had expanded hugely, but it had gotten quite cruel, and there was a lot of fighting. And he was killed, and the two sons were both killed. And so the people that supported that group of people became the Shia.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that were the more mainstream, the people, in other words, in the history of it, it's the earth plane that's the Sunni. They talk about, you know, how Fatima washed her hands and mm-hmm. getting water from a well and serving her father and that kind of thing. And the Shia has much more a romantic idea, like Fatima's name is engraved on the leg of God's throne. That is it, a Shia.
Uh-huh.
So in 2014, I was invited to go to Amman, Jordan, to visit Dr. Arthur Buehler, who is a scholar, a wonderful Islamic scholar. And he had received a 25-volume book on Fatima's life.
Oh, and this is the project that you're working on.
This is
now.
The one I'm working on.
Oh, do
on now.
Tell, yes.
25 volumes from Qum, Iran. And it's not in Farsi, it's actually in Arabic. And so we would sit at a table from morning to night, and he would translate and I would transcribe. So I thought it might be fun to just give you a sample of that process. In a recent poem that I've written, I have 50 poems I'm working on having published right now on Fatima's life because I think we need to know about, what the people were like in early Islam and what the message was. And
the human beings.
The human beings behind it all. So from the 25 volumes, this story is from volume 9, page 252 of Ansari's biography of Fatima Azara, daughter of Prophet Muhammad. So Shia historians offer this elegant description of her last moments before she died. Bilal, the man with a beautiful voice who recited the call to prayer 5 times a day, said that Fatima sighed whenever she repeated, "Muhammad is the messenger of God." At the end of her life, she was saying these words when she shuddered and sighed deeply. That was her last breath.
Mm.
So it's kind of a mystical version of her death because she's going out on this phrase.
Right.
And the phrase is Muhammadan Rasulullah. And it's repeated by millions of Muslims several times a day. So it's like even more than I pledge allegiance to the flag. You know,
it's more intimate.
It has this deep, deep stream that goes with it. So there's a commentary by a Sufi, Hazratanai Khan, who came to America from India in 1910. He says, the Rasul, the messenger, is the one who represents God's perfection through human limitation. The one who represents God's perfection through human limitation. I love that.
That's very interesting.
That's the messenger of God. So the other thing I want to say is there's a group of females, heavenly females, called Houris. And they're known for their large, beautiful eyes, and they're kind of the goddesses of heaven. This is in hendecasyllabics, which is close to sapphics. So it goes long, short, long, short, short, long, short, long, short, long, short, 11 syllables. And you can't vary it. And this is called Letters of Love. Houris call to her spirit, signal nightfall. Metaphorical beings untie her life. She exhales Arabic, dazzling repetition, lifts. Muhammad Rasulillah re-echoes God's perfection through human limitation. On these letters of love, she can fly to heaven. On these letters of love, she can fly to heaven.
Thank you so much. Tamam, is there a website where people can go to find out about your work?
Yeah, there is. It's called Complete Word, because Tamam means complete, so that worked out really well. CompleteWord.com, and it's on the card there.
Great. I see that now.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on Word Temple today. Keep me posted about these upcoming poems, too.
I certainly will, and Parabola will have the introduction to Untold in its spring issue. Up until April, it'll be on the newsstand.
April 2016,
yeah.
Parabola. Okay, look for it, everybody. Okay, once again, this was Tamam Khan reading from Untold, The History of the Wives of Prophet Muhammad. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And this is Catherine Hastings. I want to thank my guests tonight, Annie Finch, who read from her books Spells and Calendar, and Tamam Khan, who read from Untold, A History of the Wives of the Prophet Muhammad. Before signing off tonight, I want to make sure that you have marked on your calendars a very special celebration, Saturday, March 26th at 7 p.m. at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. The Word Temple Poetry Series will hold a very special evening for Dana Gioia. This will be a celebration of his appointment as our new California State Poet Laureate. We will have refreshments and wine. There will be two students who will be reciting poems that they recited for the Poetry Out Loud contest, a program that Dana Gioia started. And hopefully we will have some other entertainment as well. So please do mark your calendars, Saturday, March 26th at 7 p.m. at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. And if you'd like more information, you can go to wordtemple.com. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. If you have any questions or comments, please contact me at khastings@wordtemple.com. Thanks for listening.